Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Greetings to all of you listening around the world and a warm welcome as we bring you another edition of the Answers for the Family radio show. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and if you're a regular listener, thank you for joining us once again. If this is your first time, please make yourself comfortable as we bring you Answers for the Family. Each week, this show will address issues such as family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, lasting health, and so much more. Now, having over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, I am grateful to have met and worked with some of the top professionals and many people in the helping fields and skilled authors who are working to make this world a better place for all of us. Now, you all can do me a big favor. Please check out some of our past shows at AnswersForTheFamily.com to hear some informative and entertaining guests, as well as dynamic co-hosts, as they discuss ways for you and your loved ones to become happier, healthier, and more at peace. Now, I'm also looking for some show ambassadors who will forward at least one of our shows to your social media group or to someone you know who can benefit from a particular subject. I want you to know that I truly appreciate it, and it's just another way that we can make a positive difference in the lives of others. Now, I can tell you that in this particular show, that there are some statistics out there that really suggests that we all know somebody who has been incarcerated. We all know somebody who either has made some bad choices, and that's why our topic is going to be When I Got Out, because it's also the title of our guest's new book. Now, once in a while, a novel comes around that profoundly touches on a topic that is both tragic, socially taboo, and at the same time, it gets as real as it can get. Now, unfortunately, a little known and disturbing fact is that the United States is the world leader in incarceration, with 2.2 million people currently in the nation's prisons and jails. That's a 500% increase over the last 40 years. Now, according to a study entitled Demographic Patterns of Cumulative Arrest Prevalence by Ages 18 to 23, nearly one in three African Americans have been arrested at least once by the age of 23. By the age of 28 to 33, about 20% of men with at least a high school diploma but less than a bachelor's degree hold some kind of criminal conviction or guilty plea. Imagine being one of those young people who, through a series of bad choices, finds themselves convicted and imprisoned for being an accessory or in some way involved in a very serious crime. Now, fast forward many years to the day of your release and imagine, what would you do when you get out? Now, to discuss this and more, our guest, Peter Seth, is a writer living in Los Angeles. He was born in Brooklyn and raised on Long Island. He wrote and directed the award-winning short film Lunch with Louie, which I remember, which appeared in more than 35 festivals around the world. When I Got Out is his second novel. His first, What It Was Like, has been praised by readers all over the country. And you don't have to take my word for it. Check out the 5-star reviews on Amazon.com and the high rating on Goodreads.com. Peter, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Great to be here, Alan.
It is good to have you. And as I was reading the book, one of the things that struck me was the fact that I feel like I'm being entertained, and I choose novels like yours because I want to be entertained or I want to escape. But I also felt a little bit educated because I was also learning things that I think a lot of people don't know. And so I really appreciate the fact that it was obvious that you did a lot of research to nail it the way that you did.
Well, thank you, Alan. I do appreciate that. I do research before I start my novels. I like my novels to be based in some reality before I create a dramatic, entertaining story for the reader.
That's great. Now, I mentioned a few statistics in the introduction, but before we talk about the book, share some of the information that you found during your research that surprised you.
Well, I was really, I mean, everyone knows prison life is bad, but I was really surprised to find how grueling it is, and especially how hard it is for people released from prison. The statistics are just frightening. The homelessness is 10 times the average rate. Unemployment, food insecurity, everything that's hard in this world is harder for an ex-con. So from there, I started to develop a story of hope and redemption for my character, Larry.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting when you mention that about how difficult it is. I want to put a plug out there also for a friend of mine that has a company called Do Good Works. And what's beautiful about that is that they hire the unhirable. And they have found that there are some incredible people out there that have done their time and have had an incredibly difficult time finding any type of job.
Absolutely. It's most employers are hesitant to hire someone. Mm-hmm. No matter if, and I believe in redemption and forgiveness and that people can change their lives, but a lot of people are not. So it just makes it harder for the ex-con.
Sure. Now, again, I mentioned some statistics and such, in the very beginning, one of which was there's been a 500% increase over the last 40 years. Now, do you believe that implementation of an increase of these people, do you believe that part of that is contributed by having corporately owned prisons? Do you think that they've contributed to this drastic increase in the amount of people that are now being incarcerated in the United States?
Well, I think the privatization of prisons is more a result of the massive amounts of money that government was putting into incarceration. There was a lot of money to be made there. In fact, there are only 8% of American prisoners in private prisons now. But that's a lot of money. That's a lot of money. It's a big pool to want to dip into. I think that from what I've read, private prisons are good for the profits, but not good for the prisoners.
Yeah, my concern would just be that, if you're corporately owned, what is your motivation to make sure that they don't come back in?
Right. I know there is a terrible revolving door problem with, prisons and going out into the street and not being able to find a job and having no way but to find your old ways. It's a very, very difficult road and a dramatic road.
Well, speaking of dramatic, I think the way in which you wrote your character, Larry, was incredible.
Thanks a lot.
And one of the thoughts was that you wrote from first person, which I think, at least from my reading it, felt like you are kind of feeling what it is that Larry's going through, and especially in using the self-talk as well. You really felt like, you're going through some of the same stages that he was going through. What was your decision that made you decide that, okay, I'm going to write this first person?
Well, I love the first person novel. You get deep into a character and you go through what a character goes through in adventures and places you would never go to personally, but they appeal to you emotionally and find a passion between the character and the reader.
So, and again, I just mentioned Larry. So for those that are watching or listening, so Larry is the protagonist in When I Got Out. And he spent his entire adult life behind bars. When he finally gets released, he's in his 60s. How has his world changed?
His world has changed plenty. We know how hard modern life is. Can you imagine if you... He doesn't know how to operate an ATM or a phone. He doesn't know how people talk to each other these days, how the relationships between the sexes is, it's not the same as it was 40 years ago. So he comes as a stranger in a strange land and sort of has to find his way in an America that's unfamiliar to him. And that gave me a great opportunity as a novelist to have fun and drama with his situation.
Yeah, and I got that, the fish out of water theme, that And it's one of the things that I like in movies, you know, that concept. You know, I'm the person that if somebody's visiting from another country, I want to be the one to take them to Disneyland because I want to see that, you know, the way in which they respond to things that they've never seen or never done. And I get that same feeling as Larry is running into things that he couldn't imagine.
And he's trying not to make the same mistakes that put him in jail in the first place. But he has extra complications. The lawyer who had the money left to him by his parents has disappeared. So should he go after the lawyer who stole it from him or, you know, stay close to the strict rules of parole? So he has extra dramatic pressures on him.
Now, were you inspired by any particular real-world events? You know, what would some of those be?
Well, it's funny. Real-world events, not so much as any particular murderer, but I was very aware because Larry's murder, he was a famous murderer. He was the Ivy League killer as a teenage murderer in the first book, what it was like. So when he comes out, he's extremely wary of being so famous. He doesn't want to be a famous killer anymore. But in the world of social media, that's not so easy. So he's exposed in ways he doesn't want to be and forces him to take actions that some might consider self-sabotage, others would consider dramatic.
Well, and again, we're not giving anything away.
No spoilers here.
Well, and I was going to say, and I've tried to be very careful as far as with my questions because I don't want to give anything away because that's what made it so engaging, you know, was that, you know, there are some books that, you know, you feel like, okay, I'm learning something, you know, and it's, you know, more of like a textbook type of thing. But, you know, this was more, you know, more like a, you know, a TV series in which when you finish that chapter, it's like finishing an episode, but I want to binge watch now, you know?
Well, I want to make it, I want my books to be entertaining and fun for the reader, even as you're going through dramatic experiences with Larry. It's a good ride. It's a good read. And I had, you know, fun writing it and trying to make it deep and entertaining. Mm-hmm. I think life is that. I want to try to get as close to life as I can.
So, and speaking of how close you got, how close did you get with your research to be able to get the information that you got? And with both books, because your first one was based on being in, you know, so now getting out, tell us a little bit about the research it takes for a writer to gain this, because now we can kind of look at this a little differently for those people out there that, you know, that are in school, they want to be a writer and things like that. How deep do you got to go to write something like this?
Well, thank goodness for the internet. The internet is a problem with some things, but with some things, it's great. So whereas I used to have to spend my time in libraries, now I can just search. I buy books. There's some wonderful books out there. You need a combination of things. There's periodicals, but there are wonderful websites and wonderful organizations out there who are specifically trying to help parolees and ex-cons. But almost there's information out there for anything you want to write about. It's just out there. Go for it.
Great. I like that. Now, based on the research that you assembled, let me give you a magic wand. Okay, so you have a magic wand, and you can make changes in the penal system. What would some changes you would make?
Well, the first, if you want to change the penal system, change the school systems first. If you have good public schools, I think we'd have fewer criminals. People have better lives, they'd have better standards set for them, and they wouldn't wind up in prison. But that's another story. In terms of prison, I think that's to be a real change of away from pure punishment to rehabilitation. There are just too many prisoners in prison, and they are going to come out into society. And what kind of people do we want returned? Do we want damaged people, or do we want people who are worthy of a second chance? And I've read so many accounts of prisoners' lives. These are men who are genuinely sorry of what they did, and they want a better life. And I think we can help them. It's, you know, we just have to drive around the streets of LA to see all the homeless. A lot of those are ex-cons.
See, and that's a great point too, because you brought up, okay, one of the things that you do is you start working on the public school system, which, like you said, is a whole nother thing, and I am right there with you on that. I'm glad you brought up the connection to homelessness. You know, we now, over the last 10 years, you know, we've seen an explosion in homelessness. And what you're saying is that a lot of those are former prisoners. And so if you want to help, you know, decrease homelessness, let's decrease the amount of people that we're imprisoning. And if we want to imprison fewer people, you're saying, let's start at the school level.
That would be best. That would help all of society. It would help us all. But yeah, so the statistics on homelessness and ex-cons are horrible. They're 10 times more likely to be homeless. If they're multiple offenders, they're 13 times more likely to be homeless. In terms of finding an apartment, landlords don't want to rent.
Sure.
So they wind up in motels, or they wind up in single room occupancy places, or they wind up homeless, and it's not good for society.
So, again, with the magic wand, what would be some other things that you would see being able to do? Because I know that as I was doing some of my research for this, and you know there are people that are setting up social enterprises and stuff, because, you know, if you employ them, you know, now they have a much better chance of being able to find a place to live, which means they're not on the street. If they're not on the street, there's less of a chance of committing another crime.
I know the Salvation Army is very good.
Yes.
And I think Service Master is another company that employs people who've been in trouble. I think that's wonderful work, and it's, you know, it helps everybody.
Yeah. No, I couldn't agree more. I think it's great.
Life is hard out there.
Yeah. Now, you touched on something in the book, and again, we're not giving away too much, but something that I would have never have thought about, but dating after prison.
Oh, my.
You know.
Dating anytime.
That's what I was going to say. Okay, dating anytime is tough enough, but, you know, I like things sometimes when I'm going through and I'm reading it and I go, I never thought of that. You know, so talk a little bit about what Larry goes through, you know, with the concept of dating after prison. You know, how honest are, you know, it's, you know, there's some interesting things that you touch on, but share a little bit about
Absolutely. It was very important to Larry. Larry went into jail because he got involved in an obsessive teenage romance. So he's very susceptible to women. And he comes out and he wants to, of course, you know, redeem his life and you know, sort of expunge his guilt as much as possible. But he also wants life and love and tries to find it, and it's not easy. Part of it is his whole past is in prison. He can't make small talk. Everything he knows is from prison, so he can't really. He has to find it difficult. He finds it difficult to make normal small talk. So. He is a long way to go, but I'll do one spoiler. He does find love. I left him in such a bad state after the first book. I had to I owed him some happiness.
And you know again, sort of, you know, it's kind of both books, but you know, his crime started as a teenager, and as you said, it was sort of tied to love. Mm-hmm. Share a little bit about where you kind of got those ideas based on thinking about things the way a teenager would think about it. Because as I was learning about Larry, I'm realizing that you as a writer are at one point are having to think like a teenager, and now you're having to think like a 60-year-old 40 years later.
But the same guy.
But
40 years later.
Yeah.
Yes. The first book, that was a book I had in my mind for a long time, because I think everyone was in an obsessive teenage romance that was destructive. It didn't all lead to double murder, but all of us, you know, had some terrible heartbreak when we were a teenager.
Right.
And so that's why I wrote the first book. Then when I decided to write a sequel, even though the second book stands alone, I thought, what can I do to show how this man has aged and how he's still dealing with the same demons? So I just fell in love with the idea of showing a whole lifespan from the beginning and at the end.
And when you talk about dealing with his demons, you sort of set it up. It's sort of like he put up barriers. You know, how did you decide where you were going to break down barriers of where he would choose to open up and where he wouldn't?
Well, that's part of the drama of his story.
Right.
Because he has struggles, emotional struggles. He's the legal struggle trying to get his money back from his crooked lawyer. But he also has the day-to-day struggles of just trying to get through life and as a normal person. He wants to be normal. He wants to be anonymous. But he sort of denied both those things by the drama of his story.
Which is interesting because, you know, if society wouldn't have evolved into what it did as far as being able to Google everything, mm-hmm. So the mindset that he has going in would seem like you could come out and kind of blend in. But it's a whole different thing. And it was very interesting to me that if you don't know that all of this has happened, you might go out thinking that, you know, hey, I've moved to some little town and people don't know who I am and everything is fine. But the way that you wrote it was that wasn't possible.
Yeah. Finally, he thinks everyone knows who he is, and it makes it impossible for him to live a normal life. But he struggles for normality, and I have to say, through the love of a good woman, he finds his way through. And he has through a lot of mistakes and missteps. He finds his happiness.
Yeah, there was a correlation. So, do you think that starting over in prison is anything like starting over after a divorce or the death of a spouse or?
Well, it's more serious, but a lot of people in their 60s are having to find a new way to live. It's, as you say, after a divorce or an illness or you lose your job or you get transferred, and you have to just pick yourself up and find a new way to maybe even improve your life. You could even have a better second life.
Well, and that's a great point because that's kind of where I was going with is that in this day and age of people starting to learn more about mindfulness and things that they're figuring out how do I take this negative in my life and turn it into something that is positive? How can I, you know, go from, let's say, a divorce situation or whatever and look at it and say, okay, maybe this was meant to be, maybe I'm supposed to end up with somebody else, maybe this is supposed to happen, and tying that to something like prison seems incredibly difficult.
Yeah, yes, it's what makes it more dramatic.
Exactly.
But I believe that people can change and improve themselves. There's I know on your show you have lots of experts who've studied human behavior, and there are techniques and ways of living better and relating better. I have friends who were in bad first marriages and they found a way to make a good second marriage, and you can work on yourself. I think we all should.
Yeah.
You know, we only have one life. Let's make it the best we can.
All right. We are talking with Peter Seth. We are talking about his new book, When I Got Out. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. Stay with us. You're listening to Answers for the Family.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service, licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services and Westshield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
And we're back. You're listening to Answers for the Family. And we are talking with Peter Seth. We're talking about his new book, When I Got Out. One of the things that's great about this show is that we get listener questions, and I love the fact that people take the time to send in some questions ahead of time. And I want you to know, for everybody out there, we truly appreciate it. I know a lot of people have to work in the middle of the day, so we get feedback where people will say, look, I'm a teacher, or I'm in a job to where I can't call in, but I'd love to ask some questions. So if you go on the website and you subscribe, we will send you information about who's going to be on. You can send us questions ahead of time. We can ask those questions. And then however you listen, if it's iTunes or Stitcher or SoundCloud or iHeart, there's so many of them. However you listen, you can then go later on and listen to the show, and you'll still be able to hear your answer. So again, I want to thank the people that do that. This question reads, it says, growing up in one of the worst communities in Chicago, I'm one of the lucky ones as I made it out to a better life. Looking back at my childhood and the friends few of them have been so fortunate. Some are struggling to survive, and some have done things that ended up in jail. Okay, before I buy your book, I have a question. I see that it appears to talk a lot about the challenges, but does it also give people hope? And this is from Alicia in Illinois.
So, thank you, Alicia, for your question. Yes, the fate of an ex-con is very difficult. My book is portrays it in its reality, but my book is filled with hope. I got very attached to Larry. And I wanted to give him a dramatic ride, but I wanted to show that life can go on and life can get better, no matter what you've done and no matter what has been done to you. But I really believe in human redemption and the possibilities of human growth. And so I put it all into Larry.
One of the things that you touched on, and again, I don't think we're giving anything away, but talk a little bit about some of the coping mechanisms and resources, that you gave Larry, that when people read it, realize that it was really kind of meant for anybody.
Well, yeah, Larry has a tough time. He does get a job coming out of prison, which is quite unusual, but it's a job in the gig economy, and he's a tough time getting by. He lives paycheck to paycheck, like a lot of us, and is very shy because of his past. He doesn't want to be known. He doesn't go back to his hometown. He goes to a totally different part of the New York area. Yeah. But he's still hungry for human love and human contact. I think Larry was basically a good person who made some very bad decisions, but there's still goodness in his heart. And he tries to get back in touch with it.
Yeah, and you mentioned that he moved to a different area. From some of the research that I did, that's incredibly common.
Yes,
that people will in the more severe crimes. So when people have been a long time, I noticed that I was looking at some percentages, and they said there's a great deal of them that go away. But doesn't that then also kind of make it more difficult on one hand because you don't have any support system?
Totally right, Alan. And it's a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation, because if you go back to your old neighborhood, you could fall in with the same gangs and the same criminals that got you in trouble in the first place. If you go where you don't know anyone, you don't have any support. So some very difficult choices, whatever you do. You have a difficult choice. But I've read so many accounts of these men and women's lives, and they're fighters. They can be damaged. They don't have the advantages that most people have, but they're trying to fight for a good life.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have another comment that came in, and this one reads, my friend is a former judge who works with a nonprofit in our state reforming juvenile legislation. their intent is to change the current practice of kids who are being incarcerated for minor infractions instead of using other techniques to deal with the problem. Your novel is centered around a young man making bad decisions. I believe the story has a great deal of relevance to so many of our youth today. I love your novel's look, and it looks like this is something that I want to read and to forward to others. And this is from Avery in Texas.
That's terrific. Thank you, Avery.
Yeah, and it's interesting this one comes from Texas because I know that because I, with my other job, I work in different states, and Texas is still one of the states that you can still get the death penalty as a minor.
Oh, yes, Texas is strict, that's for sure. There are lots of some of the states are very, very hard on their prisoners. Some states, like California, are trying to do something about it because it's just a huge... it's a drain on the treasury, and it's a drain on society. We have better things to do with people than lock them up. I know they feel that way.
Yeah, and I agree. You know what? We're going to take another little break, but we will be right back. So everybody, stay with us. You're listening to Answers for the Family.
Hello, I'm Marty Cove. You might remember me from roles such as Sensei in the Karate Kid films. I've done over 100 films and countless stunts in my career, and I've always given 100%. With the damage done to my body over time, I needed to find relief from my chronic pain. My passion for health and fitness drove me to find a natural way to combat muscle pain. Teaming up with doctors, detectives, and a compounding pharmacist, we've created Marty's Cobra Cove Ultra Strength CBD Cream. It's the only thing that has been strong enough to knock out my pain, and fast. Honestly. You may have tried the rest, but it's time to try the best. It's legal, it's safe, and 100% effective. Show your pain no mercy. Go to www.martyscobracove.com.
The Karate Kid. Good for him.
All right, and thank you, Marty. So that was nice as we were sitting here for those that couldn't hear. So Peter's going, oh, yeah, that's Marty Cove, Karate Kid.
Cobra Kai.
Yes, exactly. And I think that's, we were talking a little bit about the laws. Did you do much research in the laws? Because obviously you have your character is in New York.
Yes.
Okay. But, did you just research the laws in New York and say, this is what I'm going to do? Or did you research different states and say, I'm going to put him in New York?
Well, I did my New York research. And the other information I found out is subsequent, really, to writing the book. I just got, just very interested in the subject. It's a compelling subject. These are, these are human beings who are, in very difficult situations, and it's a topic that concerns all of us. Really, it's a nationwide problem.
So, a lot of what the book talks about, again for those, and again I highly recommend it. It's really about reinventing oneself. Is that in this case it's a drastic situation, but I think it's something that we all go through at some point in time in life where we are reinventing ourselves. If you had to reinvent yourself, where would you start?
Oh my God, I'd probably be a few inches taller. Oh my goodness, that is a frightening thought. I mean, it would put right back in my face. What would I do? I would, I don't know. Go to medical school and try to be a doctor. It's kind of late for that, but I would do something to help people. That's there's nothing like helping people.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
There we go. There we go. Much better now.
There we go. All right. So now that Larry's out there, now that you've written the book, do you go back over it and think? What are some other things I might have done to reinvent Larry?
Well, there's a famous quote from a French poet, Paul Valéry, said, a work of art is never finished, just abandoned. So, at one point I had to turn in the book, but I still, I come across things, say, wow, I should have put that in. Ooh, that would have been great. You can't, I'm still so involved with it, but, you know, the book is as it is. But, you know, I think of, yeah, I could have done that. Ooh, that would have been a good idea. Mm-hmm. You know, whenever I read another good writer, I say, ooh, I could have stolen that. But I didn't. I stole what I stole and kept the rest for myself.
Now, what is next for you?
I'm working on a play. I love theater, and these books, they took a lot out of me. I love writing them, but it was a lot of work. And my best friend's an actor, and I've been promising to write him a play. And I used to write plays long ago, and this is a lot of fun. And it's something that someone can get in one evening. My books are long and take a while to read, but you know, a play is immediate. It's in, you know, one sitting. So I'm going to try that.
Great. And share a little bit about your movie.
Oh, okay. Well, I did long ago with the same friend of mine. We did a short called Lunch with Louie, and it was a tremendous amount of fun to do. We got a lot of success with it. We did film festivals. We even I even sold it. I made some money on it. It's run all over the world because there's only one line of dialogue in it, so it's mainly silent. But it's on my website. It's on YouTube, and I thought I'd get you know, some money to make a feature, but that sort of never happened. You know how that is with film finance.
Yes,
it is.
Exactly.
But yeah, I do it again.
Well, to talk a little bit about, because you mentioned, and I've been racking my brain trying to figure out which festival I saw it in. Okay, because I was there was a period of time in which I went to a lot of festivals. I've been to Cannes twice, and I've been to a lot of other festivals all over the country. And so I was racking my brain because I saw it, and I went, "Oh, I've seen that." And then I started thinking about it, and I went, "I don't remember which festival I was at."
I was lucky. I had great success with Lunch with Louie. It was at the AFI Festival, Breckenridge, Manhattan Short Festivals in Europe. I was lucky. It won awards in Europe. I used to know more, but there were 35. I just kept setting it out, and people kept saying yes. So hey, it was great.
Yeah. So and then as soon as you said that, it was probably AFI because that's the one I've been to the most.
I was so lucky. It got first showed at the Chinese Theater. I couldn't have been happier. It was a great night.
I love it. So the play. Are you at a stage to where you can share a little bit? Can you give a little teaser? Because then ideally, the best thing to do then is if we can tease them a little bit, we can bring you back when it comes time and tell them where it's going to be playing and where they can see it.
Well, it's funny. It's about a father and daughter. I have a wonderful daughter, and it's a complex relationship. So I thought I could write a good father-daughter play. And it's a ways away, but I'm having fun with it. I hope she doesn't hate me for it. I promise. So, I promise you, Daisy, it'll be fine.
Well, maybe we need to have her in.
No, you should be so lucky to have my daughter in. She's a doll.
What I'm saying is, so when it comes time for it to be released, we'd love to have you back.
That'd be great.
But let's have both of you, because then let's have her be able to point out the things and get her two cents worth.
That would
in
be fun. Oh,
and
my goodness.
Stuff.
Yes. No. I'm lucky. I have a wonderful son and wonderful daughter, and that would.
That's great. Hey, doesn't get much better than that.
Yes, family is key. Family mm-hmm. is key when it comes down to it. And people live all different kinds of lives. I know lots of single people. I know people with no children. There's lots of ways to be happy. But I know for myself, I get great joy from my family.
That's great.
In this unsettled, unfriendly world, people need, you need love.
Yep. And it's my belief it's actually it's a lot friendlier if people turn off the news.
Well, you know, you're so right, Alan. It's like, it's a push-pull. I can't turn things off. I'm an information junkie. I love to learn, but sometimes it just makes you so upset. You can't sleep at night. It's like, life is tough enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my latest rule now, because I also feel that I need to stay up on what's going on, so I try to listen to things that it's so hard to find something that doesn't have a slant, so I'll listen to things that slant each way.
Mm-hmm, right.
And as soon as somebody goes into something that I believe is either completely inaccurate or just propaganda, I turn it off.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things that we try to tell people here is that, you know, just as soon as you feel that that's what's going on, turn it off and switch to something that is positive, that is uplifting. There are more shows. And if people will start giving their ears and eyeballs to things like that, eventually the advertisers will figure out that we have to go where the eyeballs are.
I totally agree with you. On the internet, the delete button is it's the best button you can use sometimes.
Exactly.
You don't have to, endure all the junk that's coming your way. You can be selective. And there is wonderful stuff out there if you are selective. And the resources of the world are more available to us than ever before. We have a friend who's in Argentina. We just texted with our friend in Argentina. She's riding horses in Argentina. What's wrong with that?
Yeah. You know? And they send you pictures back, right?
Everything. So move towards the positive. Run towards the light.
Mm-hmm. Well, and for everybody out there, again, the book is When I Got Out, and it's written in first person. So let's kind of go over the same question that we just went over, but what would Larry say about the situation right now? What would Larry say about what he's learned and where he has gotten himself to? What would Larry say about life right now and how to get the best things out of it?
Well, it's sort of frightening for Larry. When he went into jail at 1970, so the Vietnam War was going on, civil rights battles were still being fought, the feminist movement was starting, so it was a time of some political turmoil. But when he comes out now, he finds things are, in a way, worse. People are angrier. There's just more tension all around society. So it's a lot for him to deal with. So he has to try to find a way to navigate through an unfriendly, strange world to him. But he tries to reach for sort of, what he knows and what he strives for, which is human contact and human warmth.
It's interesting. As you were saying that, the thought that came through my mind was that he went in sort of the infancy of some of those things, and he came out and they were on steroids.
Yes. I mean, I'm not a young guy. We've seen some changes, and some for the better, some not for the better. But, I think Americans are basically optimistic, and we want to improve things. And I think we'll just keep fighting for our country.
Couldn't agree more.
What choice have we?
Yes.
What choice have we?
So, Al, for those people that either want to, if they want to watch the short film, if they want to get more information about you or about the books, what's the best way for them to do that?
I have a website, peterseth.com. I have a lot of blogs on there, material about my books. I have Lunch with Louie, and anything else I can think to put up that would amuse readers and amuse me. I put stuff on my website just because I want to keep track of it so I can keep all my good my YouTube in one place. But you can search the blog and find lots of good stuff on there.
That's great. Well, first I just want to acknowledge you for really putting out a book that, as I said, it's both entertaining and educational at the same time. And what I like, it made me think.
I want people to think and feel and have a good time too. I
mean, yeah.
a book is a great escape.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, and when you say had a good time, it was amazing to me that Larry could find humor. In what would seem like, I mean, for most of us, anybody that you've written something in first person that allows us to put ourselves in that position. But then when we think of it, or at least for me, when I think of it and I'm putting myself in that position, it's like, wow. And I find myself rooting for Larry.
Great.
But also when he finds humor in things, and to me, I'm like, wow, you're a better person than me because...
I think you have to find humor. I imagine if I were in prison for a long time, I would, I don't know how, but I'd find some ways to laugh. And I think that that we all have to, you know, laugh a little to get through life. So I wanted to make Larry a good companion for the reader, so that you're rooting for him, and you see his problems, and you see his, but he's human. I want to say he's a real guy. I mean, yeah. He's a real person to me. So he has to crack jokes to keep himself going, because life is tough, and we need all laughs.
Sure, sure. It's somebody that made a huge
poor guy
mistake in the beginning of his life.
Yes, and which some people do, and most people find a way to avoid. But I had to have a dramatic story. But I think a lot of what he goes through are very universal problems, and looking for universal solutions. I mean, we all sort of want the same thing. You know, we're not all that different. We all want love and support, and just not too much, but just enough. So I try to have Larry, find it. And, he's a tough road. He goes through lots of changes, but I think he's a human universal story.
Yeah, and I think so too. Now, there was a lot of decisions, and probably before you wrote the first book, a lot of decisions about who he would be. And, And again, I don't want us to seem like we're making it seem like one person just made one mistake and then they're still a great person or something like that. But you chose to go with somebody who made one huge mistake. It doesn't take away from the fact that we realize there are bad people, and there are bad people that's all they do. And everything is based on how can I exploit someone else in any way possible. I think I know the answer, but what was your reasoning for deciding that I'm not going to go with that kind of prisoner?
Yes, he was at different levels of guilt as I went through different drafts of the book. But I sort of wanted him to be where he is. He's sort of an accomplice to murder. He falls in love too hard and makes some bad choices. But he's basically a good person. The problem, as you say, is lots of people in prison are bad and have to stay there. And it's we do need prisons. There are bad, violent people who need to be locked up. The problem is filtering out the people who really could use a second chance and shouldn't be wasting their entire lives in prison. That's where professional penologists and criminologists come in. But it's a problem for all of us, because there's too many people involved.
All right. Well, again, thank you so much for writing it, and I'll be looking forward to the play.
Thanks,
so, again, thank you so much.
Great. Thanks a lot, Alan.
All right. Now, and for everybody out there, please be sure to put on your calendar and tune in next Monday when we will be joined by Aaron Thompson and Rob Danson to discuss Food on Foot, Working Together to End Homelessness. We're still going to be talking about ending homelessness. One way is to try to keep prisoners from having to end up homeless, but there's so many other ways to do it. So please visit our archives of past interviews at answersforthefamily.com, or you can subscribe to the show through iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, Vimeo, Spreaker, SoundCloud, and iHeartRadio. And I have to write all that down because I can't remember. We keep getting new ones. But it's great. I love this medium. I love the fact that we're able to sign on and to reach more people this way. And if you like what you hear, please leave a review on whichever one you listen. I want you to know that it helps us reach more people. We greatly appreciate it. And the next time that you're on Facebook or Twitter, please remember to stop by our page, stop by Peter's page, and check out some of the latest posts. If you like them, please like us. Continue to spread the word. And in the meantime, for everybody out there, be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers for the Family.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.